Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hello, boys and girls. Hello, Emily. Always good to be talking metal.
Welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast, home of all things hard rock and heavy metal. I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. Now, let's get things started with the Talking Metal theme song, written by Rob Halford, Metal Mike, and Roy Z.
Hey guys, welcome to another edition of Talking Metal. I'm here with my co-host and my wife, Emily Striegel. How are you, Emily?
Doing good.
We are both very excited to go down to the Rock Carnival and see Overkill, Monster Magnet, Fuel, Hailstorm, Zebra, Twisted Sister, Alice Cooper, Ace Frehley, and so many more. Who are you looking forward to seeing, Emily?
Looking forward to seeing Monster Magnet. I haven't seen them forever. Really, really love them. Ace Frehley, Overkill, of course. So looking forward to that. Twisted Sister, Alice Cooper. Love Alice Cooper. So just everyone. I'm really looking forward. And some bands I haven't seen. I've never seen The Used.
Me neither. The Used, a lot of great. Hailstorm is playing, of course. Blue Oyster Cult, a band I've never seen. Zebra, a band I've never seen, believe it or not. Can't wait for this festival. It is down in Lakewood, New Jersey. And please, please come down to New Jersey and check this out, because it's a once-in-a-lifetime event, one of Twisted Sister's final performances. It was supposed to be their absolute final performance, but it seems like that might not be the case anymore. Ace Frehley of Kiss fame. Oh, it's going to be an amazing three-day event. Lots of craft beer, lots of food trucks. Kids are free. We might bring our kids down on Sunday. We're debating that. It's going to be an absolutely incredible weekend, three-day weekend. September 30th through October 2nd in Lakewood, New Jersey, the Rock Carnival. We'll have the links through today's show notes on TalkingMetal.com. And speaking of Overkill and speaking of the Rock Carnival, today's guest, Bobby Blitz, the interview conducted by my wife, Emily Striegel. And Emily, why don't we get into some Overkill right now? This is Armacist, and then we're going to hear your interview with Bobby Blitz after this song.
It's a
Hello, Talking Metal listeners. It's Emily Striegel coming at you today with the amazing Bobby Blitz from Overkill. How are you doing today, Bobby?
Hey, how are you? I'm in the office, and I was waiting for your call. I was actually going over a few mixes and doing that stuff that us metallic people do.
Awesome, awesome. Can I hear some of the mixes? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I'll play them over the phone. You'll be able to get a real good feel for them that way.
You're not serious. Are you serious?
Come on. I'll play them over the phone, but you won't be able to hear them.
I know. Well, that's why I'll come over later. I'm in Jersey, too. Did you know that?
Okay, didn't we see each other down in... When's the last... We saw each other in Dingbats.
No? Yes,
that's
yes.
Right.
At Dingo's, across the street from Dingbats.
Dingo's down, right. How's Mark doing? Everything well?
He's awesome. He's really sad he can't do the interview today, but... You know, we both work full time, but I work from home, so I have a little more flexibility than he does to do like daytime interviews. So but it's fun because, you know, I got to do Jeff Tate a couple weeks ago, and you know, if it doesn't work out for the evening hours, he usually asks me to pick up the interview. But yeah, he's sad he wasn't able to do today, but that's his loss is my gain. I get to talk to Bobby Blitz.
That's right. It's kind of like, I mean, for both of us, we're just kind of like cheating on the work thing. I mean, you call it work, but the reality of it is it's just conversational. You're just kind of taking a break. You pour a cup of coffee or whatever you do, and then
it's just amazing.
Have a short conversation.
I know.
A break.
I love working from home. It's fantastic because I have a lot of flexibility that way. So very cool.
Okay, I always thought it was really funny because I do the same and have since the band started managing itself back in the 90s. So my commute is from, like, my bedroom down to my office. And I've been working out this stuff over in Europe going, listen, man, it's just not going to work. And if this guy could see me with my hair sticking out, sitting here in my underpants, stretching my dog, throwing coffee on myself, he'd have zero respect for me.
I know. You know, I was on a conference. I mean, I'm constantly on conference calls, constantly. And we do a lot of, like, WebEx where you're presenting. And sometimes... Occasionally, my camera on my computer would, like, click on. And, like, here I am in, like, same thing. Hair sticking straight out in my pajamas or whatever. So I actually put a postage stamp over the camera because if it ever happens again, I don't want that to ever happen again. So anyway.
You listen to me, mister. We're either getting that extra show or... I can't take this person seriously.
I'm so excited to see you guys in your home state of New Jersey on October 1st at the Rock Carnival. So we have, Ace Frehley, Twisted Sister, Monster Magnet, Alice Cooper, Hailstorm, Overkill. So many amazing bands playing that weekend. I'm really looking forward to it. How about you?
Well, you know, I think we're one of those flag-flying, Jersey Strong, three-decades-long kind of a band. I mean, so for us to partake in something like this, obviously for us is only natural. I mean, it's all, you know, there's always a certain pride that comes out of New Jersey. I think it's that working-class ethic and that ability to let loose when necessary. So I think you put two together, you get Overkill. You put three together, you get Overkill at the Rock Carnival. And I think it's a great lineup, and it's going to be just a killer show.
Totally. I cannot wait. So where exactly in New Jersey is Overkill from? This is one thing I don't really know.
Well, we're all spread out at this point. I actually grew up in Rockland County in New York, but I've been living in Jersey since the mid-'80s. The band started in the Summit, New Providence area, so Union County.
Yep.
So let's say 15 minutes west of the Holland Tunnel.
Yeah.
That's where it started. Then we rehearsed in Staten Island, then back in Jersey, and now in Jersey for good now for approximately 20, 25 years, I guess.
Yep, Jersey Strong, for sure. You know, when I think of...
Jersey Strong, 3 decades long.
That's pretty awesome. So there is a new Overkill album on the way, supposedly titled Grinding Wheel. So
yes,
I want to hear a little bit about this. Grinding Wheel, I was right. Okay, so let's hear a little bit about this. Are you done recording it, and where did you record it, and any details you can share on the new album?
You know, I mean, the great part about a new album is that it's new. Opportunity. You know, I think somewhere inside ourselves, though, at the end of the day, we're always overkill. We always think, oh, here we go. It's our chance to take over the world again. And I think that that becomes a motivating factor. You know, it's not just another record. It's the new record. That's what makes the difference every time around. And I think it's probably our best foot forward when it comes to thinking about a project, as we go into it with that type of an excitement. So you get a band that is based, let's say, in the history of heavy metal with regard to those three decades I mentioned earlier, but you also get that excitement, which gives us kind of, let's say, a current or, you know, a modern-day viability, a value in the present day. So I think that, you know, this is what Overkill's, let's say, key to success with regard to recording this many records over this amount of time, is that we'll get everyone like a new opportunity. And we did record it in Jersey, a little bit of Dee Dee's. There was some stuff done in Florida with Dave. I did vocals with a local guy up here. So we kind of spread it out, but when we start it and we finish it, we're always kind of doing it together. So it's, let's say, a combination of new school technology versus that old school, let's sit in the rehearsal hall, open a few beers, and, you know, sweat. So it's both.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's best case scenario, too, because you can't expect to do it totally old school. But I think going new school and doing everything kind of virtually, so to speak, doesn't... you lose a little bit there, too. So that sounds like a good deal that you got a mixed model there.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's necessary to stay current with what's going on. You know, let's say reinvent, teach the old dog new tricks. And obviously we've been in tune and in touch with this since that technology has been available to us, and just kind of adapted to it with regard to that reinvention. But, you know, the idea for us about being a band, you know our social media in the old days was shaking hands and wearing out the soles of our sneakers, putting flyers on the windshield wipers, you know what I mean? So, I mean, the idea is that if you can still have that principle instilled within you, when it comes to making music, that it is that kind of a social event, even for the five of us, to be in that room together. I think he did great success because it's the confirmation of band as opposed to individuals.
Totally. Totally. I love that concept. You know, and like you said, so there, you guys have been around for 30 years. I mean, so many bands who have been around as long as Overkill seem not to release as much new music. And one thing, you guys are kind of the exception to that, with new albums coming out like every 2 years even. So what inspires you to keep creating new music? And is this something that just pushes you forward, or something you know, just crave, like every couple of years, it's time to do it again?
It's funny, you know, I said on MTV, it was probably 20 years ago, I was asked the question, I was sitting there, and it came flying out of my mouth like this: we're like Irish Catholics, clockwork, every 9 months. And then... Well, you know, I'm Irish Catholic. I suppose I could say that, even in this period. but I think they edited it, first of all.
Oh my God!
But I think the point really is, and I said it early on when you asked about the Rock Carnival, I think it's work ethic. I think we're happier with our tools on that. You know, we're not artists. We're much more these blue collar guys who are craftsmen with regard to it. And if you're happier with your tools on, as opposed to wondering why the world doesn't accept your genius, I think that you can get some pretty good results by, let's say, nose to the grindstone kind of a thing, you know, making it happen, forcing the issue. And I think that's always been our principle, is that, you know, we look at this as we're in the fight, and you don't stop fighting. If you stop fighting, you lose. And somewhere in there, that is probably a hidden principle within us that makes that music come out with current day value, and let's say quite regularly over those decades of the past.
Well, it works for you, and I mean that kind of work ethic, I think, is hard to find nowadays. Bands that, you know, expect it just to come to them. You guys are kind of the opposite. You guys are out there still working for it, and I think your audience, you know, sees that.
Well, if you think of it as that fight, you're in the fight to win the fight. You know, you don't go in to lose. You go in to win. And when that becomes part of the forethought, I think you're always putting your best foot forward. Well, one of the proudest things that I have with regard to this band is that under the circumstances, every time, whether it be live or whether it be in the studio, we've done the best that we could, or exceeded that in some cases, because of, you know, let's say all the stars lining up or everybody giving that extra percentage, you know, that sure, there is such a thing as 100%, but there's that little extra, you know, that whether you equate it to an athlete or whether you equate it to a job or something. And I think that's one of the things I'm the most proud of, and I think because of that you get some pretty decent results. And again, there's that New Jersey work ethic, you know.
Yep, there you go. So you know, looking way back, let's go way back to like 1987, I think. So
I thought you were going to say like the Kennedy administration or World War II.
It doesn't feel way back for me. When I say 1987, that does not feel way back for me. But it kind of is way back now, isn't it?
I have cars that are older than that.
I know. Let's be honest. I know. 87. Okay. It's been a while. 87. So Taking Over. Huh? Taking Over. Overkill album called Taking Over. It's really now viewed as one of the most respected and influential thrash albums of the 80s metal scene. So I'm curious, looking back all these years, way, way back, no, I'm just kidding.
Okay.
What kind of memories do you have of recording sessions for that album?
Oh, I don't know. I was drunk. I'm sorry. I just like saying that. It was unique for us. We worked, this was our second record. Now, obviously, you don't gain a ton of experience from record one to record two. I think that what we did realize is that we wanted to create a signature sound, and that sound was going to be a wall of guitars. And I think that was the only precursor we went to the studio with. The other thing I remember was that between the first and second records, on a personal level, I had started developing what was called polyps on my vocal cords.
Oh, wow.
The polyp is a simple thing. It's mm-hmm. it's like a wart. It's an abrasion. It's a skin irritation, but it can develop into what's called nodes, and then it can kind of shut you down if you're, you know, using your pipes to express yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But I started taking singing lessons as to sing correctly, and you know, I mean, obviously that's to opinion or whether I'm doing it not or right, but more the polyps way, and I started singing differently on the Taking Over record as opposed to the first record. And I thought to me that was one of the more notable differences on the records was that wall of guitars, and that the vocal, even though the music was more aggressive and heavy, the vocal is actually a cleaner vocal than the first record because of that polyp situation. The producer was Alex Turrialis, who was at the top of his game for this. So I think that you put all those three things together, and that kind of helped with the sound of the record, or those recording sessions, which we had done in Ithaca, New York, at a place called Pyramid. So they're probably my three memories of it.
Yeah. So I'm curious then, did you ever have any surgical intervention did it ever develop into nodes where you had to have surgery, or has, you know, have the tricks you've learned as a vocalist helped out?
No, it was really simple. It was very much like somebody working out with weights, that if they were lifting something wrong continuously, they were mm-hmm. going to tear a muscle or they were going to do damage further. I was diagnosed or found the damage before I had done that. So all I had to really do was learn how to use that muscle correctly. Yeah. It was, at the point of polyp, it was starting to develop.
Yeah, you caught it early.
As opposed to develop. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was just a matter of, well, actually the vocal cords become stronger, and they actually wear away any of that abrasion by using them correctly, as opposed to straining them all the time. And it helped me forever sing on the road. And, I mean, to this day, I still use the techniques I was taught in that year to warm up before shows in, you know, 2016. So it's
amazing.
So it's something that was you know, for me, you know, probably the luck, because somebody said, hey, this is what's happening to you. And I was like, oh, and I better go get this looked into, and started doing like a little research. And I ended up with a guy in New York City named Don Lawrence, who taught a whole bunch of people from my era, the era before, and even afterward. And he said, yep, this is what you have, and we can make it work if you just follow my instructions. So it worked out well for me.
And that worked out. So after that came out then, you guys went out on the road with Megadeth, right? Did you go out on their Peace Sells Who's Buying tour? Was that?
Yeah, it was Peace Sells Taking Over. That's correct.
And Taking Over. So what memories do you have of that tour? Anything that sticks out to you? Was that a good time?
Well, we had known Dave and the guys, you know, prior, even on their first record, Killing Is My Business. The whole thrash scene kind of exploded on two coasts and in Germany, you know, kind of at one time. You know, it was, we were all kind of bastard cousins of each other to some degree. So, you know, when bands from the West Coast would come to the East Coast, we would go out and see them and vice versa, or, you know, so a creator come into town earlier on, we would go see them. Or if we were touring Germany, we would, you know, see Creator or Destruction or something like so. So we had already experience with Megadeth. And I think that, you know, this was the MTV era where, you know, Peace Sells was actually, I think, the song they used to do MTV News. You know, they break into the bass riff, you know, so Megadeth was on a rocket ship that was taking them higher at that particular time, and we were still kind of grinding it out in the foxholes, you know, throwing hand grenades, you know. But it was a fun tour because I think it was about the unexplained. Nobody knew what Bigger was at the time. All we knew was we were doing what we wanted to do.
Yeah.
But as the tour progressed, I think that we saw. And this is both fans, not just Overkill, that we were reaching more people with this than, you know, was ever anticipated or ever before in our careers. So it was a really good 1-2 punch. I think the third band on the bill was a band out of Detroit called the Necros, which is was actually this punk band that used Rat Fink. I don't know if you remember, but it was an artist's rendition of a rat smoking a cigarette as their logo. So it was a cool 1-2-3 kind of a punch.
Very cool. And then fast forward to coming up, I think next week, are you going out to Knotfest with the Slipknot guys? Is that next week in California?
Yeah, see, Ozfest on Saturday, and we're on Sunday on the Knotfest out in San Bernardino at the big pavilion out there. We've been out there on a few tours, actually with Megadeth in, I guess, 2008 on Gigantour, and then we went out and did a show with Maiden in 2012. And now this will be our third time out there at this pavilion. But it's supposed to be a madhouse. I mean, three or four stages. You know, Anthrax, Slipknot, End, right down the line, plenty of Trivium, plenty of headbanging all the way through the day, so really looking forward to it. It's good to see these festivals hitting the U.S. at the frequency they are and also at the grandeur and size that they are.
Yeah, I know. So I've heard some people complain, oh, you know, there are too many of these festivals, this and that. It's like, I never get tired of them, and people are coming, people are buying tickets. So I mean, even the one coming up in Jersey, it's not like it's right, it's like down by the shore, I think, you know. And I think there's still going to be a ton of people there having the time of their lives, you know. So I never get tired of it. Bring it on.
Well, it's a great celebration, you know. I mean, that's really what it is. I mean, you know, in a perfect world, I think a band wants to present themselves as they see themselves to be. And in a festival situation, you can't always do that. But if you kind of put that on the side and say, okay, I'll save that for the headline tour, but I'll be part of this explosion, this celebration, it really, to me, shows the value of the music, whether it be the Rock Carnival or whether it be the Knotfest, is that if you get this many people interested in this kind of a thing, boy, you're holding something really powerful in your hands. You know, it is a complete group effort between, you know, those performing and those attending. that becomes one of the places on the face of the earth at that particular time that's got the most energy in it. So it's kind of cool to be part of that. I mean, it's it kind of bleeds the pores and gets you high, you know?
I couldn't agree more. I can't imagine being on stage, but I just know being in the audience, that kind of energy is something you don't feel often. And whenever people say, oh, you know, rock is dead, this or that, I say, why don't you come with me to the rock carnival and I'll show you rocks. Rock is not dead. Why don't you?
Well, I like it when people say rock is dead because they don't ever show up at that place to bring any bad fucking energy.
Exactly. That's a good point.
Right. So yeah, you're right. Beat it.
So one of my favorite memories of you and Talking Metal is when you jammed a Motorhead song with Mark and John. My husband and John Astronomy from Ostrowski, whatever you want to call him, from this show, and I know you're a big Motorhead fan. So did you get to hang out with Lemmy much? I know, you know, we lost him this past year, so everyone's talking about Lemmy, but did we ever stop talking about Lemmy?
I remember what you're talking about specifically. It was the band we called it Turtlehead.
Turtlehead.
Mike Portnoy stood up and said, "Why don't we call ourselves Turtlehead?" We said, "I'm in." Frank Bello on the bass, John and Mark on guitars, me doing the vocals. We did Motorhead's Overkill.
Yes, you
and
did.
And it was a fantastic performance. And yes, I got to know Lemmy after the Megadeth tour. We had done a triple threat across the U.S., and that was Slayer, Motorhead, Overkill. So we had met those guys back in, I think the record they were doing was 1916, and it was when they had two guitars. They had Phil Campbell, and they had Wurzel on guitar, Lemmy, obviously, and Filthy Animal Taylor on the drums. And, you know, through the years, I'd run into these guys, and Wurzel had left, and Mickey D had come in on drums, and Lemmy still remember your name, you know, all the way through. Hey, Bobby Blitz, how are you?
Amazing.
Hey, Bobby Blitz, stop over in my dressing room. Mm-hmm. And I remember, and this is my, you know, my Lemmy moment, because many of the other ones are personal, but this one was actually in public, and it was 2008, and we were touring with them as direct support to Motorhead through Europe. We were in Germany on the last night, and my sound guy, my light guy, comes up to me, Big Eric, and says, "Lemmy wants to see you for a few minutes." And I walk in, and, "Hey, Lem, what's going on?" He goes, "I want you to come up and sing Overkill with me tonight." And I was like, "Fuck, this is going to be great, right?" But I know the song Cold. I mean, you saw me perform it on Talking Metal. That's not the point. But I was nervous, you know. Now I'm doing it with the guy who wrote the song. So I take on my forearm, I write the first word of each verse on my forearm. Once you have the first verse, you're right. Well, sure enough, he catches me right in the middle of the song and yells right in the microphone, "Cheat notes!" Right? So I don't know what. There's 10,000 crazy motor headbangers in Berlin, and I'm like, "Oh shit, I've been caught by the guy who wrote the song."
And the irony of the situation is you knew the song Cold, you know, it's just...
Oh, crazy, right? I just didn't want to screw it up. So in any case, I totally panicked. I dive into the audience of all these people, right? And he's leaning over, and I could see that toothy grin to this day. I'm upside down in the crowd, and I could see him leaning over, mouthing the words, "Cheat, no! Cheat, no!"
You never lived it down either. You will never live it down.
Well, you know something, it's a great memory. Let's say that is my motor moment.
That's awesome. If I would give anything for Lemmy to bust my balls about anything. So.
I got to tell you something. He took me back to the dressing room afterwards and played me demos of this rockabilly stuff he had been doing. And we sat there and had a drink and had a good laugh over the cheat notes. So it was it actually worked out great. It was, in retrospect, one of my fondest moments of being on the road.
That's amazing. I love that story. Thank you so much. Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing you at Rock Carnival. I can't wait. I mean, it's been too long since I've seen you guys live. I mean, I saw, what's the festival that Megadeth did? Gosh, I saw you at PNC like years ago at this point. Might be the last time I saw you guys. So I'm really looking forward to it. Mark and John and I will be there. Let's all grab a drink after the Overkill set. We'll definitely come say hi to you. And we're really grateful to have you on the show. Thanks so much for coming on today, Bobby.
Oh, thanks for your time. Do my best to Mark, and I look forward to seeing everybody at the Rock Carnival.
Will do. All right. We'll talk soon.
What you just heard was the classic Overkill song going way back, Coma. Great stuff. And Emily, great job with this interview. And on behalf of myself and all the Talking Metal listeners, thank you for doing these, because as I explained before, I work during the day, as do you, but you work from home, so you have a little more flexibility to throw everything together technically and call these people up and do an interview. And you're doing an excellent, excellent job. Honestly, I mean that.
You're really nice, because I'm very new to this, and I'm a huge Talking Metal fan. So to all the listeners out there, like, I've been a fan alongside of all of you for many years now. And so to be able to have this opportunity is awesome. I do feel extremely awkward, to be honest with you, sometimes, because it's a new experience for me, but I'm really enjoying it. And this interview in particular was so much fun. I mean, I love Bobby Blitz. I have stories, like Mark can tell you, like, I love Bobby Blitz. He does this crazy dance move where he does this like head banging thing with, and he does this like pelvic thrust at the same time. It's like the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. But I've had the opportunity of like hanging with him at least once, and his lovely wife. And like, he's just like the real deal. There's no other word for Bobby Blitz. Like, there's no other way to explain him except that he's authentic. He's totally personable, and he's just like New Jersey. There's something about, like, I guess I'm not born and raised in New Jersey, but I'm a Jersey girl now, and he just pulls at my heartstrings because he's the real deal.
And the thing I love about him is when you talk to him, he seems genuinely interested in what you're saying. It's not just all about him. He makes you feel important, and he's, you know, great guy to just have a conversation with.
Yeah, I mean, and he's a total rock star, but he's a rock star who doesn't take himself too seriously. He works for it. He still takes his fans very seriously and what he does very seriously, and it just comes across. And I have so much respect for him.
Absolutely, me too. And just a great band, such an important band in the history of heavy metal and the history of thrash. And Emily, thanks for doing that interview. Really appreciate it. And a great job on all these interviews so far. Guys, this is Hello from the Gutter, classic Overkill here on Talking Metal.
Living in
That was Hello from the Gutter, classic Overkill here on Talking Metal. Guys, please leave a review for Talking Metal on iTunes. That is helpful. You don't even have to write one up. You can just like rate us with stars there. Tell your friends about Talking Metal. You can also buy a Talking Metal t-shirt in the merch section on talkingmetal.com. You can give us a PayPal donation, and you can use our Amazon links to link you over to Amazon, where you make all your purchases as you normally would, with no markup, nothing like that. It's just an additional step going to Talking Metal to use our links to link you over to Amazon. And you guys do use those links, and I appreciate that. And that's going to do it. You can keep in touch with me on Twitter. You can like Talking Metal's Facebook page. You can friend me on Facebook. And what else? If you prefer email, hit me up at mark@talkingmetal.com. All right. Thanks so much, guys. We'll end things with one of my favorite Overkill songs, which I wish would end up back in the set list. It's called Power Surge. Classic, classic stuff right here on Talking Metal. This will take us out. We'll see you next time, guys. Thanks.